The verse I want to focus in on today is on chapter 14 of our parsha, the beginning of Revi in Parshas Metsora, chapter 14 of Vayikra, verse 33. And the verse goes, Vayidaber Adonai Moshe ve'el Aaron lemo, ki sovo el Eretz Canaan, when you go to the land of Canaan, asher ani nosein lachem la'achuza, that I will give to you as an inheritance, v'nosati nega tzoras bebeit Eretz achuzatchem, and I will give you a nega tzoras, this illness, this disease, bebeit Eretz achuzatchem. It's very interesting, problematical grammar there, bebeit Eretz achuzatchem. And if I can translate from a great translator, Leviticus 14, when you come into the land of Canaan, which I am about to give you as a holding, an inheritance, and I put the scaly affliction in the house of the land of your holding. Do you see how Alter kind of skirts the issue? That's a literal translation. Bebeit Eretz Achuzchem, in the house of the land of your holding. And then he whose house it shall come, tells the priest, says something like an affliction. Something like an affliction. Kenega Niroliba. I just saw something like a scaly affliction in the walls of my house. So what I want to do today is to compare and contrast the Netziv's reading of this verse with the classical rabbinical midrashic approach to this verse. What's the problem with this verse? Well, number one, it says, Ki sovo el eretz kanan asher ani nosein lochem. Nosein. Now, if we look at Rashi, Rashi is quite clear in his Ein dover yotze midei pshuto. What is this nosein I'm giving to you? Why are you telling me it's a gift? Nosein is a matana. V'nosati negat zoras bebeit eretz achuzat. I just gave you a gift of Eretz Yisrael, and now I'm giving you this plague? What kind of business is that? What kind of promise is that? Matana, matana. And then it goes even worse. The Medrash and Rashi is bothered, V'nosati, I'm going to give you, what gift I'm going to give you? Negat zoras. There's two words of nosati. Ani nosein lochem lachuzah, I'm going to the Eretz Yisrael, giving you Eretz Yisrael as a matana, and then I'm going to give you a double matana. I'm going to give you negat zoras in the very house that I'm giving you. And Rashi is bothered by that because there is a pasuk in Devarim that the Medrash points out immediately by telling us that in Devarim, we are told that not only am I going to give you the land of Israel as a matana, it actually tells you, I'm going to give you batei moleg tov. I'm going to give you houses full of goodness. So you have a double whammy here, because the very pasuk in Devarim is telling us that you're going to be getting ubatim meleim kol tov. Devarim 6:11. Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu, ani hiftachti lavosech. I promised your dad, I promised your ancestors, Shani machnis es b'neim le'eretz meleya kol tuv. Literally, not just the land filled with goodness, but the land is filled with homes. And you're going to be able to just walk into those homes. Shenema, ubotim meleim kol tuv. The houses will be filled with good. So what are you telling me? I'm giving you this matana of this beautiful land, Eretz Canaan, but nosati negatzorayas bebeit Eretz, in the very house that I'm giving you as a gift that I promised you mole kol tuv, I'm giving you negatzorayas. This is the problem of the Medrash. And the Medrash comes on with this just stunning agadita from Toras Kohanim that Rashi quotes. Rashi quotes that Medrash. He could have chosen many Midrashim. Big problem, why are you telling me it's Eretz Canaan, not Eretz Achivi, Achiti, Ayivusi? The Netziv will come to that. Basura hi lahem. Rashi tells us this is, I bring good tidings to Zion. It's good tidings. Basura. I bring a basura lahem. Shehanagaim baim aleim, that the afflictions are coming upon them. I'm going to come back to why is an affliction a basura later on. Lefi shehit minu Amoraim. The Amorites, when they heard Am Yisrael is coming, everybody knows this from 11th grade, they hid matmonias shel zahav. What did they do? They stuffed their mattresses with all their bitcoins, and they put them in the stones of their houses. They would pull out a stone and stuff in treasure. Bekiros botem, in the walls of their houses. Kol arbayim shana. They had 40 years that they were told, they're coming, they're coming, the British are coming. And they are stuffing their homes with treasures. Bitcoin, gold coins, treasury notes. Shehoyu yusro bamidbar. Va'al yedei hanega. As a result of the affliction, notates habayis. What would happen? The person would go to the Kohen and say, Kanega, this little stone over here looks like it has a bit of scaly affliction. There's a bit of scaly over there. And the Kohen would come and say, yeah, yep, you're going to have to pull that stone out, throw it out in the courtyard. And underneath the stone, they would find the treasure. What a stunning midrash, an absolutely stunning midrash that resolves the semantic problem of the verse, because we have two verses, one saying bate negatzaras, the other one in Devarim saying bate mole koltuv. How do I reconcile the koltuv with the tzaras? And it turns out that the tzaras actually is a sign of the treasure of the koltuv. Stunning Torah's koning. And that's how Rashi brings us the resolution of Kisovo al Eretz Kanaan, Asher no sane the matana of the Achuza and the matana of the Bayit. Now, I want to contrast that with our Netziv. By way of introduction, I want to just take a kind of bird's eye view of the way the Netziv's commentary on HaMikdavar really is. First of all, it assumes a type of reader. The fact that he's quoting the She'iltas and he quotes from Gemara and Shas and Yerushalmi a lot means that he expects his reader to be one of his Yingalite in the Voloshin Yeshiva. There's no question that he demands a level of erudition from his readers that others you might think not. The Malbim is talking to a lay audience. He's holding them, he's couching them, he's educating them. The Netziv makes assumptions about your prior knowledge. For instance, when Batya spoke last week about the Tirda and the definition of Tirda, that presumed that you knew the Gemara in Brachas and in Erevin, what it means when a chosan is tarud the night of his wedding. He makes these assumptions. The other thing I want to point out is the ethical imperative, that it's not only about doing parshanut, but he has certain, let's say, underlying assumptions that run throughout the HaMikdavar. One is this ethical imperative. The aspect of studying Torah lishma is the first, but then finding within Torah contemporary wisdom, ethics, and good midos. There are a number of ethical topics that the Netziv stresses explicitly a number of times. Apparently, he believes that there's a need for his contemporaries to address and improve in the area of interpersonal ethics. Even in his introduction to the Torah, the Netziv says he relates at length to the central reason for the destruction of the Bayis Sheni. Sinas Chinom. The Netziv explains that although there were great Torah scholars in the area at the time of the Korban Bayis Sheni, they were not as morally impeccable as the Torahs of the Ovos. And therefore, the whole of Sefer Bereishis is an ethical introduction to the Torah, that the Torah and the particular praxis of the ritual of Torah is insufficient, requiring the introduction of the stories of the patriarchs, the lives of the patriarchs, to instruct us in the moral aspect of Torah. There was a praise for the Avos, aside from them being righteous and saintly and lovers of God to the greatest extent, they were also morally impeccable. Indeed, they followed this model of behavior even when the nations of the world, the ugly idolaters, were not. And this is all opposed to the second temporal generation. Because of the sinas chinam, they suspected that anyone who acted in a way not in accordance with their notion of yiras Hashem was a tzaduki and a heretic. And that led ultimately to the bloodshed and to all the evils of the world. It's a stunning, moralistic, underlying pinning thought of the Netziv. And it is difficult not to see here, and in what we're about to read, an implied criticism, a deep criticism of the Netziv's contemporaries. It may be that specifically in the Volozhin Yeshiva, the mother of all yeshivot, which put a great emphasis on the toil and effort required to fulfill the mitzvah of Torah study, going back to Reb Chaim Volozhin and to the Gra, the Rosh Yeshiva was concerned that the students might indeed be wise and understanding, but they were not moral in terms of their behavior and good manners. They might fight for truth, but at the price of honor and love of the other. And therefore, he warned of a situation such as this. And I'm not speaking out of speculation. I want to quote evidence for that from a very unlikely source, a book by Abba Balosha called Bialik Bevolozhin, the poet and the manuvel, Chaim Nachman Bialik, who studied in Bevolozhin, wrote in his diary. He describes the opposition of the students to the Netziv's desire to appoint his son, Reb Chaim Berlin, to become the Rosh Yeshiva after his retirement in the following way, and I quote, "Every day and every hour, the Netziv would find anonymous messages, many written with heavy hands, filled with words hard as sinews against him, kasher gegidin, and they caused him grievous injury. Like the frogs in Egypt, these letters arose and engulfed the Netziv. They were in his bedchamber, on his bed, in the Oron HaKodesh, in his shtender, in his talis bag, and among his bookshelves and in the pockets of his clothing. There was no place clear of them which showed great cruelty." And I want to suggest that what we're about to learn may have a bearing on that, and also on the criticism that he received for supporting the Chovav Eitz Zion in the year 5649, which was 1888, 1889. And he writes this in his Egeret Zion: "I have been shocked to see how many lies and hypocrisies have arisen to devise evil schemes against our brothers who live in the colonies in our holy land. May God cut off the duplicitous lips," the Pasuk in Tehillim, "for which duplicity they make a mitzvah of settling the land a sin, and they dissuade the many from performing this mitzvah. This is one of the 10 things precluding teshuvah." These are very strong words coming from the Netziv himself. And I want to suggest that the Pasuk that we dealt with from the Medrash gives support to this understanding of the Netziv's approach to ethics, interpersonal ethics, and especially when it came to decisions he made about his support for his son, Reb Chaim Berlin, and also the Chovav Eitz Zion. Writes the Netziv, "Ki sovo al Eretz Kanan, kvar hirgishu b'medrash rabba." We already know this sense from Medrash, "Almashe yichad akosov Eretz Kanan." And we already know why the Medrash, which in Vayikra Rabba and in Torah's Koronim, is very bothered by, why are you singling out Ki Sovar Eretz Canaan? Why not all the other seven nations? What's specific about Eretz Canaan that you call Eretz Yisrael, specifically Eretz Canaan at this point? Upirshu Shehoyu Sochrim. Ah, where did the Canaanites live? Canaanim Nichbede Eretz. the Pasuk in Yeshayahu. The Canaanites were the upper crust. They lived in Mar-a-Lago. They were the merchants, the Wall Street merchants. They were the big businessmen. V'hinei Masha Kananim Oyu Sokrim Biyoter. How do I know that they were more involved in business than agriculture or tool making or village, whatever? Al pi akosu b'pasha shlach lecho en bamidbo v'hakanani yoshev al hayam v'al hayardein. Now, why would they specifically be telling us in the Torah that the Canaanim lived by the ocean, by the waters? The Yoshvei Chof Hayamim Mesugalim L'Schoira Biyoter, because those who work in the ports, the stevedores, the merchants around the ports are more Mesugal. It's going to attract businessmen and merchants, Mimedina L'Medina. That is cross-cultural. You will find the merchants always hanging around the ports, waiting for imports, and then adding on the tax or their profit to it. So now we understand why we said Kisovar El Eretz Canaan, but why specifically regarding Metzora? Now here comes the punchline. The Nireh. Dimishum de ikat soraz bar al Loshon Hora. Metzora is a notarikon, the Greek word for splitting a word into its two parts to extract extra meaning. So metzora is motzi Loshon Hora, shame ra, motzi shame ra, metzora. That we've been told already in the Gemara in Erechin. De Loshon Hora, de lo ahani masev amil mechaper. And we're told the following halacha. This is the Netziv requiring that you, the reader, absolutely understand that there's a problem by telling me that Metzora's punishment is Loshon Hora. The Loshon Hora, the punishment for Loshon Hora is Metzora. Who told you that? Where in Shas does it tell you that? In fact, we have a kapora for the Loshon Hora. What's the kapora from the Loshon Hora? The me'il of the Kohen Gadol is mechaper for Loshon Hora. That's a beferish of Gemara. And you know that, of course. So the Netziv tells you, what are you bringing me something new about Metzora? And Metzora is Moiti Shemra. This is all drush. We have a halacha that tells you what the treatment for Loshon Hora is. Im kein ikar Loshon Hora zu metzuya biyoter bein asocharin shemitpanasim min hareva. Ah, the Netziv comes to tell us something very profound. In his ethical sensibility, he's telling us, you know what? I'll tell you why we're mentioning this about the Canaanim, because the Canaanim were socharim. Because Loshon Hora, and now this is not the Chofetz Chaim's definition of Loshon Hora, you're going to see. Loshon Hora is to be found mostly among businessmen. Now, that doesn't mean that businessmen are chatterboxes sitting around whilst they're knitting, chatting about other people. That is not the definition that the Netziv has for Loshon Hora. The Netziv's Loshon Hora is what's happening to him, the hate mail that he gets, or the hate mail I get in my shtender sometimes. The hate mail that he's getting, trying to influence who he thinks should be the next Rosh Yeshiva of Valoshen. The hate mail that he gets for his support for Choyvevei Tzion, maligning those people who gave up their Torah learning to settle the land, to be colonists and work the ground. That's the Loshon Hora he's talking about. And who's talking about the Loshon Hora like that? The people he's going to raise money from. The Socharim. He walks into Varsha to collect money from wealthy Jews. And there are stories about they give him a hard time. And one of them says to him, you got money from a reformed Jew. Why should I give to you? The Netziv had to explain himself to these Socharim. They had the Loshon Hora that he was listening to them, that he had to put up with whilst he's trying to collect money from the yeshiva. And by the way, when the yeshiva closed in 1898, not many people know this. What was he doing in Warsaw? The yeshiva had closed already. Enjoy your retirement. No, there were 2,000 rubles of debt He went to Varsha with his diabetes, having had a stroke, to collect money to pay the debt for those people who had lent money in the last years of the yeshiva. That's the ethical sensibility that the Netziv had. So he says, "In kein ikar loshen hara zu metzuya biyote bein asocharim, shemitpanasim min harevach," because they only make profit from the profit. They jack up the price. And so they tell you, loshen hara, don't go to him, go to me. My product is better. Who knows if your product is better? It's the same bloody product that just came off the boat. No. My product, the lies and the loshen hara that come out of salesmen, just think of a used car salesman, if you ever bought one, then you know as honest as a used car salesman. That's what he's talking about. Uba echad bigvulo shel reyehu. Not only that, he opens up a store right on the same street as his neighbor. He doesn't care that he's masig gvul. And because of this inborn nature of capitalism, that profit only works off profit, the rise of Protestantism, the rise of capitalism and Protestantism, I don't know if he would have read that, but it was written at his time. And because I have to make a profit, and I'll do anything to make a profit, mit rabe kina, jealousy arises. He made more than me. He made more than him. V'tachrus, and competition arises. Umevi l'loshen hara da'ani l'hazik. And it brings you to this loshen hara that can damage the next guy's parnosa, the next guy's profit. It's a stunning netziv. Such an indictment. The very people that he has to raise money from are the people he implicitly criticizes here in his understanding of Metzora, Motzi Shemra, in which the Me'il of the Kohen Gadol cannot be Mechaper. It is too pernicious a Metzora, too pernicious a Loshen Hara that can be just be Mechaper, de Loshen Lora, de Lo Ahane Masa Amil. It will not help that just the Kohen Gadol saying, I'm wearing the meal, and that's Mechaper Loshen Hara. This is a much more malignant type of Loshen Hara. Misha'enke Misha Chai Al Yedei Avodas Haaretz. Now he does the stunning comparison between those who make profit on profit on profit, never having done a day's toil in their world, in their lives, the hedge fund managers who make money off the backs of the blue-collar workers who work the mills of Massachusetts and West Virginia and make their profit on their loss or their profit and their hedging and their funding. Misha Ein Kain, unlike Misha Chai Al Yedei Avodas Haaretz. Who's he talking about? The farmer, the colonist, the laborer of the land. Ukadoimer. Now, I have to say, as a physician in the boondocks of Indiana, where half my patients are farmers, I'm not sure if anyone's done a study comparing the Loshen Hara that goes on the farm versus the Loshen Hara that goes on in Wall Street. But the Netziv is talking about a certain level of tamimuskeit. The man who works avodas haaretz or kedome, Ein Adam Mitkane Bechaveiro. He's not jealous because the guy next door had better product from his cows or he had a better corn harvest. He's not going to be jealous of him. The Ein Loshen Hara Metsuyo Benehem. So they don't have this kind of, yes, there's idle chatter, yes, there's gossip, but this malignant type of being Mekane, this guy, because he made more profit, he said, you won't find that among the colonists in Chovei Tzion, the farmers in the farms of Belarus and the Ukraine. V'afilu yehei, and if even if it does happen, mikom mokum lo ahane masav shiagia mizel onish tzaras, it doesn't rise. It doesn't rise to the level of triggering the tzaras. It's a stunning netziv. And it goes to the very heart of his love of Zion and his love of the colonists and his nebuch, his desire to end his days in Eretz Yisrael, which tragically, because he had been Moise Nefesh for the yeshiva, gotten sick over it, he was unable to make that final trip to his beloved Eretz Yisrael. And I think that that goes to the heart of where he and the Medrash actually do end up in a postmodern way, as you know, I read, in the same location, that God gave us the gift of Eretz Canaan, and he gives us the gift of those houses. And those houses represent Malei Kol Tuv. And the paradox is, why would he then give us the Tzaras? And I want to suggest that both on the national level for the Netziv, in his introduction to Torah, and his mourning the loss of the Bayis Sheni because of Sinas Chinam, as well as on our personal own recovery levels and our recovery programs, working the steps that we do to fix our character defects, it turns out so paradoxical. Each of those bricks that you take to the Kohen has a tzaras, a scaly affliction on it. Who is the house? Each of us is that house. Each of us is a bias. The Sefer Yetzirah says that. Your own internal structure is a bias. Your own personality, your neshama, the neshama shenosato bi. The bi is the bias that houses the neshama. And in that bias, unfortunately, for epigenetic reasons or genetic reasons or past trauma, as many of you psychologists deal on a daily basis, we have wounds. Each of those bricks represents a scaly affliction, a wound that we've acquired over the course of our lives. It's a scaly affliction. It's a metzora. It comes from all our character defects. And the paradox is that it's natun. It's a gift. That's the paradox of the metzora. That house, that our personality with our character defects are the very gift. As Jung says, the entrance to the soul is only via the wound, that we are being invited for hu v'ela koyen, bring it to your mashpia, to your rebbe, to your rav, to your manhig, to your sponsor, to whatever you go to for your advice, for hu v'ela koyen. And you tell him, I think this brick, I think this particular personality trait of mine, k-nega, it might be a nega. And he makes the diagnosis, says, yep, take it out, get rid of it, take it out. And as you take it out and as you work the program to refine your character, what do you find underneath? The treasure. Have a good week.